Well, good morning, TNC family. I'm talking to you today not from our church sanctuary, but from my home. Thanks to Phil, who UPS'd the microphone sitting in front of me, and to Omar, who multiple times over the last week has now set me up with a much better computer situation in my home. Because we are in a stay-at-home era. Because the news is everywhere. The coronavirus is crippling our normalcy. It's gone from schools not in session, players not playing, churches not congregating, shops not selling, to stricter shelter-in-place orders, with more folks losing employment and some folks facing the direct physical threats of this virus. Last week, I spoke with a friend of mine whose spouse's boss has the virus. And I spoke with another friend whose mother has the virus. And I spoke via FaceTime with a friend in another state just finishing up a 2-week quarantine. And so many people are fearing the worst. And so as you listen to this podcast today, from wherever you are, house, condo, apartment, hiking trail, sidewalk, kitchen, living room, bedroom, I pray that you are safe and well and staying connected with friends and family, including this church family, through all the ways that we're continuing to love and serve one another. Podcasts, WebEx, Zoom, FaceTime, Facebook, phone calls, text, prayers, donations. Looking ahead this week, we will release 4 podcasts: today's, Wednesday's, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. And in addition, we will have a live online Monday-Thursday communion experience. Please stay tuned in the days ahead and expect to be hearing from me about that. Today, though, I want to take you to Jerusalem and to the hours before Jesus was crucified. Jerusalem during Passover week, the most sacred week of the Jewish year. Jerusalem, population 35,000, but during Passover week, packed with the electricity of 200,000 who have come to the city. And will you climb with me the steps to the Temple Mount and walk with me across the flat, wide open space of the outer court and come with me inside the temple into the Hall of Hewn Stones, a room built into the north wall of the temple, half inside the sanctuary and half outside, where the great Sanhedrin is meeting, the supreme religious and legal assembly in the Jewish community, made up of the high priest and the chief priests and select rabbis and leaders. And listen with me, because Jesus is on trial in front of the Sanhedrin. And they are trying to trap him. They're trying to find good cause for crucifying him in case the crowds protest or ask why. And pay attention with me to this question that they're about to ask Jesus, recorded in Mark chapter 14 and elsewhere. Did you claim that you would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? Did you claim that you would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? Did you? In high school, I worked for a time as a landscaper, lawn mower, weed puller, dirt mover, and I would sometimes have the radio on while I worked. And I'll never forget listening to the great radio voice, Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey was the most listened to radio personality in America for much of the second half of the 20th century. From 1952 through 2008, his programs reached 24 million people a week, 1,200 radio stations, 400 American Forces network stations, 300 newspapers. And among his most popular segments was one called The Rest of the Story, usually a 5-minute segment in which Harvey would tell historical vignettes with surprise endings, like the 13-year-old boy who received a cash gift from Franklin D. Roosevelt. He wasn't famous then, but would be later. His name, Fidel Castro. Or the one about the famous trial lawyer who never finished law school. Turns out to be Clarence Darrow. Or about how John Pemberton from Columbus, Georgia, invented a medicinal beverage in 1886 using coca leaves from Africa. It was later marketed as a temperance beverage and was sold as Coca-Cola. And for decades, Harvey would address millions of listeners each week, telling a story and ending with a surprise reveal, after which he'd say,
"Now you know the rest of the story."
Hearing that brings back good memories, doesn't it? Well, I want to do that today with this temple question. Did you claim that you would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? And I want to tell the rest of the story behind that question. Because after Jesus answers, they decide they will crucify him. And telling the rest of the story will help us better understand this Holy Week we enter. And when I get to the end, I believe it will also speak directly into your home right now, in the middle of this coronavirus era. Did you claim that you would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? Historically, temples were the central and fundamental cog in a city's wheel. The engine of the culture's car, the centerpiece of a community's identity. And the main point of intersection in the entire universe between humans and the divine. In the ancient Near East, temples were built in almost every community. And from the most elaborate to the most simple, they all had the same general design. Gardens or outer courts, inner courts, holy places, and most holy places. And typically, there was a seven-phase building process for the temple that could take many months or longer. And once the temple was built, there would be a temple dedication ceremony that also took 7 days. And at the conclusion of the dedication process, the god that the temple was built in honor of would enter the temple for rest. Not rest the way humans need naps and nighttime sleep, because folks did not believe the gods were exhausted, obviously. This is rest as opposed to unrest, a restful, ordered, focused work environment versus a disordered, unrestful work environment. And after that 7 day, that 7 phase temple dedication ceremony, at that point, the temple became the main place of intersection between humans and the divine. And if you wanted to meet with the divine, you would have to go to the temple. Again, virtually all cultures had gods and built temples to their gods. And this was true of the Judeo-Christian God, Yahweh. In fact, the whole human story, according to our Bible, is really a story about temples. The place where the heavens and earth meet, overlap, intersect. Which is why Genesis chapter 1 is the 7 day, 7 stage creation of the heaven and earth joined together world. In the beginning, God. In the beginning, God created the ultimate temple. Because God is constructing the whole world as his temple, so he can dwell with his creation. And in Genesis 2, we learn that the center of this good creation is the Garden of Eden, which features many of the characteristics of sacred space in the ancient world. An adjoining garden, source of waters, cherub guardians, God walking about in the garden at the time of the evening breeze. But, as you know, that heaven and earth reality is disrupted when Adam and Eve rebel, eat the apple. And Adam and Eve and humanity is separated from the garden. Sacred heavenly space is separated from the earthly spaces. Now, what's interesting is, after humans rebel, they don't drive God out of the world. God, get out of our world! No. Instead, God banishes them from the sacred space, the garden where heaven and earth overlap, into a place where God's presence isn't as immediately accessible. But the ancients would soon learn, even though heaven and earth were not entirely overlapping and intersecting anymore, there were certain places where there was a little Garden of Eden in the middle of the human world, a little place where heaven and earth did overlap and intersect. There's a famous story about this in Scripture. In Genesis chapter 28, Jacob has a dream at night out in a field. He's running from his family, his brother wants to kill him, and he's hungry and tired, and he goes to sleep in a field. And he has this dream in which he sees a stairway, a ramp. Verse 12, with its top reaching to heaven and the angels of God ascending and descending on this ramp, this stairway, this ladder between God's space and ours. You'll note he's dreaming about a place where heaven and earth meet, and where the divine space is all of a sudden accessible to human space. And when Jacob wakes up, he says, God was in this place. And he names the place Bethel, which means house of God. And he makes an offering there. And then later, an actual Israelite temple is built on that spot. And the ancients came to understand that God's space and human space overlap in these periodic temples. In other words, it's not like you'd walk around any corner, any neighborhood, any GPS coordinate, and find this in divinely infused space. Only in temples. So, for example, you may want to imagine the Temple of the Twin-Tailed Mermaid, Starbucks. Imagine if every Starbucks is a little place where heaven meets earth, intersects and overlaps. So if you want to be where divine presence dwells, go to Starbucks. Temples are the place where the divine dwells. A couple other quick examples of this in Exodus, God's people are in the wilderness, and so they build a portable temple, a wilderness temple, so God can dwell in their midst. And then the Israelites finally enter the promised land, conquer it, and occupy it. And the tabernacle, this heaven and earth joined together space, is placed in a shrine at Shiloh until it is captured by the Philistines. David then brings it back and has this idea of building a permanent temple in his new capital, Jerusalem. David says, I will build a permanent house for God, to which the prophet Nathan responds, no way, brother, God will build you a house. And from your descendants, David, will come the Messiah, God himself. And when Messiah comes, God's presence will return to the whole earth, not just to periodic bricks and mortar temples. The whole earth will again be God's temple, just like the beginning. And the prophet Daniel looks forward to this day, and Isaiah describes this day, and Ezekiel talks about this day. And then, about 30 years after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, he begins his public ministry in Galilee, and he uses this phrase a lot. Quote, the kingdom of heaven is near. The kingdom of the heavens is near. And one day, you can read about it in John's biography of Jesus. Jesus approaches a guy named Nathanael and says, chapter 1, verse 47, here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. And Nathanael responds, how do you know me? Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree, before Philip called you. Verse 49, then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus said, you believe me because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. But you will see greater things than that. Verse 51, then Jesus added, very truly I tell you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Jesus is quoting Genesis 28 and saying Nathanael will see a place where heaven and earth meet, where heaven has access to earth and earth to heaven. but it won't be a stairway, and it won't be a bricks and mortar temple anymore. In other words, there is a new temple, a new place where heaven and earth are joined together. And it's in and through Jesus. Now, fast forward to a dramatic, climactic, and prophetic encounter between the personal Jesus and the bricks and mortar temple on the Monday before Jesus is crucified. Mark chapter 11, verse 12 tells us that on Monday, 4 days before Jesus would be crucified, he entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the temples of the money changers and knocked over the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. He said, "Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations? But you have made it a den of thieves." He's quoting the prophet Jeremiah here, by the way. Now, I gotta say, this is not like a scene of Jesus you'd see framed over a family's fireplace mantle, or in a child's bedroom. Baby Jesus on a bed of straw, Jesus with children, Jesus holding a lamb, maybe, sure. But this picture is like of the Jesus who says elsewhere, "Woe, you Pharisees, you blind guides! You strain at a gnat, swallow a camel. You are the father of the devil." Like, you're probably not going to be able to buy a coffee mug with these quotes or this temple scene on it. Which is why, after Jesus quotes Jeremiah, verse 18 tells us, the chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him. Because Jeremiah is not advocating a reform of the temple. He was predicting its destruction. And in the same way, Jesus is not talking about a renovation. He's talking about a revolution. New Testament historian N.T. Wright, discussing this passage, writes that, quote, Jesus's deepest belief regarding the temple was that the time had come for God to judge the entire institution. Jesus acted out the temple's destruction because he envisioned that, in some sense, a new meeting place for God and his people would be built. He goes on, no longer would the temple in Jerusalem be the place where heaven and earth met. From now on, heaven and earth would meet in and through the person of the one like a son of man, who after his suffering would be vindicated and would be seen enthroned beside the Ancient of Days. Therefore, new community, what's happening is a rethinking of God's presence, and it's moving from a building back to the whole earth. Which is why the Apostle Paul writes to the church at Ephesus, chapter 2, verse 21. In him, the whole building is fitted together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord. Verse 22, and in him, you two are being built together into a dwelling place for God in his Spirit. It's the great reversal of the Genesis fall. It's the return to the whole earth being the place where the divine dwells. And therefore, we need to not think of heaven as being miles away. We need to think of heaven as a present dimension hidden behind an invisible curtain. And therefore, the temple, the church, is not the only place you go to meet with God. Because God can meet you anywhere. And so your kitchen right now is a temple. Your living room is a temple. Your body is a temple. Your bedroom is a temple. Your basement is a temple. Your back porch is a temple. Your breakfast table is a communion table. Your couch is a sanctuary chair. Your Instagram account is a temple. Your text thread is a temple. Your neighborhood is a temple. Your pharmacy and your shopping centers are temples, because all places are places where you can fully access the divine. And don't take that for granted, because that is not always how humans have seen the world. You know, the temple in Jesus' day had been rebuilt under the leadership of King Herod. And the temple was built with local limestone, and most of the stones were about, listen to this, 50-ton stones. And if you Google Herodian stones, by the way, you can learn a lot more about them. But first century historian Josephus says that the stones were chiseled at a quarry a mile away from the Temple Mount. And it took 1,000 oxen to drag the stones into place. And so you have these giant 50-ton stones with cornerstones that were 80 tons. And they were moved a mile, thousands and thousands of them. And Herod figured out how to place the stones one on top of the other, in some places 100 feet above the ground. And today, if you visit the western wall of the temple in Jerusalem, those are the Herodian stones still standing 2,000 years later. And one day John records in his biography that Jesus is in a discussion with religious authorities. And they ask him, chapter 2 in verse 18, "Jesus, what sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all these things?" Verse 19, Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days. Verse 20, they replied, "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days? Verse 21, but the temple he had spoken of was his body. "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days. He was speaking of his death and resurrection, his defeat of evil, his ushering in of a new era of forgiveness and hope and love and of the divine presence. All of scriptures, all of history was reaching its climax in and through him. The old temple system was coming to an end. It's the fourth quarter, 10 minutes to midnight. A new day is about to dawn. So, will you climb with me the steps to the Temple Mount and walk with me across the flat, wide open space of the outer court? And come with me inside the temple into the hall of hewn stones where the great Sanhedrin is meeting. And will you listen with me? Because Jesus is on trial in front of the Sanhedrin. And they're trying to trap him. They're trying to find good cause for crucifying him in case the crowds protest or ask why. And pay attention with me to this question that they are about to ask Jesus. Are you claiming to be the Creator God returned to earth at last? Did you claim that you would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? And now you know the rest of the story.